We'll call the meeting back to order. And Regent Ridley, you have some business on the academic affairs.
Yeah, I'm a tiny. I'm gonna have some of this.
Don't get it for a minute.
Thank you, Chairman Bale, and State Board. Today, we have five consent agendas on our action items, and so I'll ask the board, are there any items on the consent agenda that we need to pull off at someone's request?
These are committees.
No, this isn't consent.
These are committees.
Oh, I'm sorry. Once again, I'm
That's okay.
Always looking at the future. This is the committee. So, I have a report.
How would you like to cut just to the chase? That would be fine.
Yes, Dr. Lee, please go ahead.
Academic Affairs would like to present four certificates for your consideration this morning. I think one graduate, three undergraduate, a couple of colleges are represented. But they're all examples, I think, of us presenting a kind of packageable credential that targets some specific workforce needs and lets our graduates go forward with a special credential. And some of these will probably also attract some external students to the university because these are fairly unique kinds of credentials. The first one is a local government administration graduate certificate. And Dan Bowden from the Political Science Department, our Master of Public Administration program, is here. And Dan, could you introduce this program just briefly?
Sure. This program would be designed for those individuals who are currently working in or have a desire to work in local government administration. It's a 12-credit graduate certificate, two required courses, two electives could be selected from a list of restricted electives, geared toward, again, those that are either in career, seeking to advance their career, or pre-career, seeking to enter.
And we certainly see this as addressing our constituency as in a very rural part of a very rural state. This is some expertise that we can make available through online courses.
Dr. Lee, would you mind refreshing, and I'm sorry to catch you off guard on this, but would you mind refreshing the board's recollection of it, why it is significant, it is significantly important to have these certificates at this university in relationship to its job creation and its relationship. You touched on it about the administration and so forth, the local governments, but could you expand on that a little bit to show us why this is a good idea?
Well, I think there are several things here. One is certificates by their nature are typically 12 to 15 hours. So it's a credential that's small, and for folks who have demands on their time, it's something that they can get their hands around pretty quickly. Not all of these are online, but many of them are online, and therefore fully available to working professionals in the field. They're also stackable. For example, in this particular one, all four of these courses in this particular certificate will count toward completing a Master's of Public Administration. So part of what we're trying to do here is to give students an easy way to come into the program, get something quickly that they can take away of value, but there's also something beyond that, and not very far beyond that, that they can reach toward that would give them a degree. And in particular, in all these areas, well, just to focus on the local government one, obviously all around this region, there are lots of local governments where employers, employees want more expertise. And this certificate becomes a way of opening up the university's expertise to a really broad constituency that use of it. So certificates in a lot of ways, I think, serve the university very well, but also serve the people we're trying to work with very well.
I'd like to point out also, I think Klaus mentioned about the comparative analysis on value. These are the type of programs that do make us stand out and why our value is much better than what we receive. It's not about a dollar always. It's about how much do you leave here. If you look at this list of coursework, required coursework, and selected, these would make a great citizen for our Commonwealth or a great employee for a county government or a city government,
yes,
or an elected official. Yes. So the value that we're adding with these certificates, and thank you for your narrative, because it kind of puts us back to where we are. It puts us back to what academics are about.
Yes.
Developing students and educating our citizens. Thank you very much. So that's action item AA1.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
If your committee doesn't have it, can I ask a question?
Keep us up, sir.
Dr. Lee, who all is encompassed in the target of those people who would participate in this program? By that, I mean not just young people coming up, but existing local government people?
Oh, absolutely.
And is there a continuing education requirement to this?
Not that I know of.
I mean, not a continuing education requirement. Can it be utilized in that regard? Now, let me tell you why I'm asking that question. Local governments, especially elected officials, have a continuing education requirement. And a lot of times, CAECO and League of Cities and those organizations actually provide those opportunities. And I was just wondering if this could be somehow implemented into that and could enhance the value that food provide the Commonwealth.
So I've spoken both to Kentucky League of Cities and KCCMA and ICMA, the International City Council City County Management Association. As far as continuing education, we see this as an on-ramp for students who may be interested in the MPA in the future, seeking more training. Maybe that they're intimidated by graduate work. This could be an opportunity to step into that. As far as continuing education, though, that we don't see this as competing with what Kentucky League of Cities is already doing as far as that continuing education. So it'd be more enhancing that. Those training opportunities that the Kentucky League of City offers rather than a supplement, rather than a supplant that.
Well, let me get into why I directed that question. If you go into a lot of the counties, the western part of the Commonwealth is a good example of it, as is the eastern part. And what you see is a lot of people that are in a treasury's position. You see magistrates and commissioners. You see, in some cases, judge executives. And a lot of these people just don't have the tools that a program like this could provide. So my thought process is, can we make this program available to those people who are already in those positions to enhance their talents?
And that would be one of the goals.
CAECO and the League of Cities will do that sort of thing to a certain degree. Won't provide a certificate, right?
And that would be the... one of the target markets is those individuals that are currently serving in local government who are seeking opportunities to improve their professionalism.
Well, I would encourage if you can. Are there other programs in the state?
There are none in the state.
Then this is a perfect opportunity for us to go talk to the CAECO and the League of Cities.
Yeah.
Perfect opportunity. Because if we can provide them, you know, they'll give us our target population to a certain degree. I mean, I'm not talking about just students coming in, which is, I understand, programs geared for. But there's another market area out there that we could tap on.
Well, I think you're telling us, too, that there's a promotional opportunity here that we need to be thinking about.
Right. I'm sorry.
How do you make sure that potential folks who might potentially be interested in this are aware of it? And but that's a very appropriate challenge to us, and we will respond to that.
Yeah.
I do think you're right. There's a considerable potential audience for this.
Well, again, I'm thinking in the big picture that it'd be a revenue generator.
Yeah, that's right.
A profit center. I mean, there's a whole Kaplan does nothing but do continuing education that goes to various different professions, and you do it online. And if this is something that's not being provided in the state, Western Kentucky University could be the continuing education for governmental relations. So I just see this as a much bigger than a wonderful program. It actually could be converted into a more of a economic engine.
And just mentioned our new budget model that we're in the process of developing, which encourages deans to be more entrepreneurial.
Exactly.
And this is something that fit very well.
And the tools are there. Exactly.
Well, I would encourage you to contact people like the executive director, Brian Ryan CAECO, and I'm not sure who the director of the League of Cities is, but those people, just let them know we've got this. We will pursue that.
Thank you very much.
Regent,
yes, I'll
comment.
Please.
And following from what Provost Lee just said on, you know, I get excited when I see programs like this because I see the value in those. and they are entrepreneurial, and you know, if we're the only one in the state doing this, and when we talk about, you know, cost of going to an education, mm-hmm. but these are the kind of things that make us stand out. These make us different. Mm-hmm. And coming from a rural area myself growing up, you know, and this being online, I really see the value in that and can see people that want to take opportunity for something like this. So I commend them, you know, for doing this and coming up with this, and I hope to see lots more of these. So, thank you.
Please take. Are we finished with the white one? Anyone want to speak to that topic again? No? Okay.
Do we need to act on this, or do we act?
I would, given committees, I would vote on each one separately.
Each one separately?
You could do it either way.
I beg your pardon?
You could do it either way.
I'd rather
wait.
It's
up to you.
I'd like to wait till the end.
Up to you.
Let's move along.
Our next certificate to consider is an undergraduate certificate in deaf studies. And Gene Strunk is the department head of that department, is here to talk about regional topics.
Hello, my name is Gene Sturgis. I'm the department head in communication sciences and disorders. I'm presenting the Deaf Studies undergraduate certificate for your approval. The certificate is 15 hours and can be completed by a non-degree seeking student from the community or by an undergraduate enrolled at WKU. It is estimated that 694,000 Kentuckians are affected by deafness and hard of hearing, which is more common in rural areas among males and older adults. No other university in Kentucky offers a certificate in deaf studies. The certificate will improve employment opportunities and advancement for health and education fields. The certificate requires no additional resources and will be taught by current faculty and instructors. Thank you.
Thank you. Point of order, I've been coached by my fellow colleagues that we probably would be more appropriate if we act on each one of these items individually so that if there is an objection to one, the others can pass. So,
good.
You can calm me down.
It's up your chair.
Right. Yeah, I know, but I need help.
The most important point is that if anyone has something to say or question, they have the opportunity to have that question.
That's right. Exactly. So let's, if you don't mind, thank you very much for your presentation. I might ask you to recap that in a second. Let's go back to the action item. This is, hey, governing by chaos is appropriate. Action item 881. So if I could have a motion to approve the first one that we discussed, and that is the local government administrative graduate certificate, to approve the establishment of the certificate in local government administration.
So moved.
So move in a second. Klaus, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. And the motion of the committee passes. Now we're ready for AA2. And if you don't mind recap, once again, I think our focus was off.
So, again, I'm presenting the Deaf Studies undergraduate certificate, which will be available for undergraduates at WKU and also for people in the community in education and health fields. It will be 15 credits and requires no additional resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And once again, I think it's a certificate that speaks to a need in the broader community. And it's again, a small certificate, readily accessible on campus and off campus. It's an important program for us to establish.
And once again, we notice on our list, it is recommended by our president. This has gone through the appropriate channels. And so the motion we will put on the floor and then discuss if necessary for the committee members. Approval to establish an undergraduate certificate in deaf studies. Do I hear so moved?
So moved.
So moved. Seconded?
Second.
Second by David. Any more comments, questions?
No, wait. No.
David, oh, you're not on the committee. So let's have another one.
Steve. It was Stephen.
Stephen, yeah. You're on the committee.
Yes.
Is that, are you seconding the motion?
Yes.
Yeah, very good. My gracious. This is more complicated than I thought. So we have a second to the motion. Are there any more of the committee members? Any discussions? And then we'll open it up to the board. Sounds like we have full support. Any board members have any? So the committee will vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. And we'll move to AA3 and try to get through this very rapidly.
And this certificate is also from the College of Health and Human Services. This is really Childhood Education Director's undergraduate certificate that prepares folks to direct child care centers. And Travis Wilson from the Department of Applied Human Sciences is here to talk about it.
Well, this is kind of an odd certificate. It's not really directed for our existing students, but students that already take courses that are non-degree seeking. And so we're looking at this as a program, and the director's certificate is required at the state for level 4 daycare systems. So anybody that is, there's 1 through 4 in that. In the top level, the state requires you to have these 4 courses as a credential. And that is also to receive public funds for those daycares. So what we're doing is basically saying we already offer these 4 courses. Let's make it a certificate. Then we will get credit for these non-degree seeking students. They will now be seeking the certificate. And it works out quite well. And we'll also be, and it's an online program. It has been online since it was created with these courses. So we'll be able to gather students from other states and not just go to the state.
In layman's terms, would you consider this a job-ready type program that someone who's already or wants to expand their knowledge in those areas for these certificates?
It is to increase the credentials, to move up
in their system.
Yeah. And to bring those daycares, give them some kind of credential to say, I want to be not a level 1, level 2, or level 3. We want to be at the highest level of the daycare world.
And it does have potential considerably beyond Bowling Green, Warren County, considerably beyond Colorado, Kentucky.
So we will be the only one in the state that has this certificate. Everybody else, there's 9 other schools, actually, I think that have been reduced down to 7, that offer these courses, and we will be the only one that provides a non-state credential, a university credential.
I'd just like to add, my mother started First Baptist Church Daycare in around 1990. And studied early childhood education along with that and took the courses. So very familiar with the need for this and the impact. And again, it's one of those with the economic impact across the state. Early childhood education is very valuable and the need for quality daycares. And glad to say First Baptist Church daycare is still going strong. it is important. And it's important to have, skilled and educated people who are running these facilities. And so I think it's a great idea.
Any other comments? Board, I ask for a motion, and we can further discuss this. Approval to establish the undergraduate certificate, the early childhood education director.
So moved.
So moved. And second.
Second.
Second. Any more discussion? Tamil, thank you very much for mentioning your mom. My mother also, at 97, still around, was a first adopter of a kindergarten. And so I understand this quite well, since I graduated 5 times from the kindergarten. It was in our home. I couldn't help it. But this is extremely, and again, it's very creative for a department to look outside of what they're doing day to day to figure out how they can add value to an existing program at no increase in budgetary area. And again, all about the students, all about our results, and that's what we're about. Any other comments? So I'd like to vote on the motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That moves forward. AA4.
The final certificate for this morning is User Experience Undergraduate Certificate. And to talk about that, we have Cliff Shaluda from Advertising and Helen Stark, who's the Director of the Department, Head of the Department of Communication.
Cliff. Thanks, David. Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about the UX certificate we have in mind. As a quick overview, I'd maybe talk about technology a little bit because I'm sure everybody's just familiar with technology or UX is people involved in the field. But when you look at technology, typically it's in 3 stages. The first stage is where it's available and the early adopters use it. The second stage is where companies load up features and then they become kind of cumbersome. For those of a certain age, you might remember the VCR blinking light. It could do a lot of things, but we weren't sure what it was. Cell phones are a pretty good example of that, too. The third stage is where we have the features, but the functions are really transparent. Consumers really buy the experience. And the iPhone would be an example of that. Most people don't know everything an iPhone does, but they appreciate the experience. Well, the same thing's happened with the Internet. Early on, or 90s really, having an Internet website was enough. These days, the focus is on the experience that you have on the Internet when you're on mobile, on your phone, on your home computer, or even TV these days. So user experience is really the discipline of understanding what consumers want when they come to a website or a mobile app or some other type of computer technology and what they expect from it. So it has a research piece, it has a design piece, and it has a testing piece, which is kind of higher level. So there's a lot of different schools, universities, UK's one. They call it human factors in this state, but it's a graduate program. It's actually organized by the psychology department, which is interesting. You have some other smaller schools that are doing more focused certificates, like the Aussie in Nashville has a certificate. So this would be the only certificate in UX in Kentucky. These courses were in the original advertising program, which was in the School of Journalism and Broadcasting, which is now in the Department of Communication. So it's a rebundling of those classes of 15 hours. It would be the advantage, and I guess that's your main interest, I'm sure. The advantage is that it would reach students beyond ad majors, and that was kind of a limiting factor. People would see advertising, oh, I don't really want to do that, but I'm interested in UX. This goes beyond that. So this would appeal to students here at Western that are in graphic design in the art department, computer science, even the marketing CIT program could see some value probably in this as well. And so I think most of the pertinent information as far as employment, workforce ready, those things are in the proposal, but I'm happy to ask questions. And Dr. Helen Stirk is here, the department head for Comm, to ask any or answer any other questions you might have on it. So fully loaded and ready.
So let's put a motion before the board and then we'll discuss. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second. All right. Now we can discuss. Yes, please.
I have a question. So there's a significant overlap, as far as I can tell, with other courses programs which already exist within the university. And so I was wondering, if it would have been better to have this somewhat interdisciplinary. So let me tell you what I'm talking about. There's sure. CS course in web programming, there's a CS course in XML, there's CIT courses in web systems development, and this is essentially similar. I mean, yes, the user experience is not in the foreground there, but you have some programming to be taught within this certificate.
Right.
And so I thought the program would be stronger if under the optional courses, there would be courses from different departments with similar content.
And I think you make a great point. The original courses we designed, which were approved in the NEAD program, actually started in fall 2015. So we've been teaching these classes, and those discussions with CS and marketing and all of those discussions occurred and were approved through the various committees, University Curriculum Committee on up. So those are classes we've already been teaching. Kids are in these classes. This is something we already own. But the great thing about the certificate is it's an add-on, and CS has expressed some interest in looking at this particular discipline of UX along with graphic design in the art department. So I really see it more as a collaborative thing now because it's not stuff just in this ad major as it was. And it's really, I mean, honestly, could be a separate thing from Comm in a sense. So it would be available to any other program, but it looks at just this user experience. So I don't see it as a redundancy as much as a collaborative addition, much like you might see at UK with human factors, because they're teaching some of the same stuff too. But it's not just design, right? It is the research on the human factors of what someone looks for and what they expect in that experience. And for those that, you know, use the Internet at all, you recognize it when you go to a website and it doesn't work as you expect, or you click a button and it doesn't do that. It's frustrating. So these are the things that we research, what consumers expect. We then test them through modeling and then actually ultimately end up at the design. So I agree in the sense there should be collaboration, and we've had conversations, and I don't know if you want to speak more to that or not. But.
Well, just very briefly. Members of the department have met with folks from computer sciences. Mustafa Titsi is in charge of computer sciences, and also Key Lee, one of the professors. And we had a conversation, and it became very clear that the one course in coding is a different kind of approach than they do in computer sciences. It's not based on algorithms, and it's not based on a mathematical understanding of programming and coding. It's a verbal logic approach. And it is, you might think of it as coding for programmers or coding for non-programmers, or you might think of it as baby coding is another possibility, or coding for dummies possibly. Because the idea is to have one course that allows people who are learning how to do and present excellent experience on digital products, how to talk to the person who's working behind the screen. We're training the person who's making that screen experience clean, clear, and beautiful. And they need to be able to have a conversation with the people who are programming the behind-the-screen experience, and that one little course does kind of get at it. I think Cliff used the word supplement. I would say compliment. I think that this certificate is good for folks who are already out in the world doing this kind of work and want to have up-to-date education in it, and I think it's a complement for many different programs within the university.
Please feel free to correct me on saying this, but as you made that wonderful description of why this is a good connection, would you say that this is connecting art and science?
I think
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, our primary interest market there, the graphic designers.
Your description to me as a layperson in this entire area is that how does the mathematic and computer programming analogy, I thought, to be able to communicate between. Once again, that's the type of student we're trying to do. It's not all about what did I get online, how did I communicate with someone, how can I make my job better, how can I make the result of the product better. So, once again, adding value. So it is making a connection.
I think you definitely caught the vision.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they think in pictures, and this is really about the visual aspect of what you see on the moon.
Absolutely. Four? Anyone? Thank you very much. Great descriptions. So with the committee, I'd like to ask for a vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. And the motion passes. The bell hasn't gone off, so we will continue. And our last item is emeritus appointment.
We have two emeritus appointments that we'd like to recommend this morning. Unfortunately, neither one of them can be with us this morning, but the first is Dr. Ellen Bonaguro, who is also from the Department of Communication. One of Ellen's prime contributions to the Department of Communication was moving the department in the direction of health communication. She did some very important early work and did some early classes that opened up a whole new area for that department, that program to be able to offer. She's probably better known across campus as the head of AARC, Academic Advising and Retention Center. She was director for a while. She was associate dean for a while. But Ellen was, a very creative person who has brought some fresh ideas and some exciting new dimensions to our communication department and to our advising work across campus for a long time. Brian Coots is recently retired. I guess he's retired next week from the headship of the Library of Public Services. I believe he was department head there for 27 years. He's published extensively. He's also been very active in terms of presentations in the community. But Brian's been a stalwart of our library operations for a long time, and I'm delighted to recommend him as well for emeritus status.
Robles Lee, the motion is for us. Could we have a motion?
So moved.
So moved. Second?
Second.
Once again, those in favor of this, any questions, any comments? Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? No. And the motion passes.
Thank you all very much.
Robles Lee, thank you very much. I don't know if this is an opportunity to say thank you for your service. I don't know. We're on the heels of the swan song?
There may be another chorus to my swan song, but yes, I'm retiring a week from tomorrow. But I'll be around in July.
Yes, I do.
Arrives on August 1st. But this is probably my last time at the school. Right. Yes.
I may not be able to say thank you very much.
wonderful participation in this transition, and I'm sure Dr. Devoni shares that, and there will be other opportunities for us to say thank you, but publicly we all appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
The university has been very generous in taking in my leaving, and I appreciate that very much. It has meant a great deal to me, and I've been certainly touched, but even a little bit surprised by some of the expressions that folks have made to me. But it's certainly bittersweet. And 43 years here is a long time, but it's been a long time because I absolutely love this institution. It's been at the core of my adult life, and I appreciate that very much. But as I'm going out the door, one person I'll invite in is Corinne Murphy. I'm very excited that we have a new dean of the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences.
Yes.
She is at Westchester University. I think you all got materials about her earlier this week. But this has been a long search, but I think Corinne is just the right person for this job, and I think you're going to enjoy the chance to get acquainted with her and to celebrate her work.
Thank you for that as well. Yes, please.
First of all, I just want to ask you a question or make a request if I could. But first of all, I want to say the value that this university is immeasurable. The second thing I want to ask is, I understand you're going to be updating and writing the history or continuing the history of this university. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Will you remember us kindly, please?
I can remember you no other way. I'm very confident that you all will be remembered kindly.
Selected memory, thank you very much.
let me say, I hope you remember us honestly. Maybe that'd be kind of, I don't know. But David fascinated me since the days my wife was on this board now over 20 years ago, and the guy has not aged.
He looks taller, too.
David really is. Lent a steadying hand to the organization over the last couple of years, and as Gil said, I think contributions would be hard to quantitate. He's done a magnificent job. We all thank you very much and look forward to seeing your face around and reading your history.
Looking forward to reading that one too, for sure. But thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Would you like for me to introduce Mac and Jeannie?
Would you please? Please.
As you all know, one of the hallmarks of this university is a really incredible School of Journalism and Broadcasting. And there is associated with that a first competition that's frequently referred to as the Pulitzer Prizes of College Journalism. And frankly, we have absolutely dominated that for a quarter of a century. And Regent Ridley thought it might be good if you all kind of got an update about this, a bit of a summary of it, particularly since we won the whole shebang this year. So we've asked Mac McCarroll from the journalism side and Jeannie Adams-Smith from the photojournalism side to talk a little bit about this. So Mac and Jeannie,
please come forward, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thanks, David. I'm going to go first. I'm Professor Mac McCarroll. I'm a coordinator for the Writing Reporting Unit, Print Web, and the School of Journalism and Broadcasting. I'm going to breeze through this, and then I'll pass it on to Jeannie, who's going to talk about the future, which is far more important than the past, except for historians. If you remember me at all in history, it will be a great honor. And I'm going to go pretty quickly because I know you're short on time. So, okay. Dr. Bale.
No, wanna, not for this. Not for this.
You want to get just around to your timer, you can crank it up.
No. This is the important. This is where the rubber meets the road.
Okay. So, the Hearst Journalism Awards. Go ahead, please. Next. Yeah. Jonathan Adams created this great poster, which Jeannie will talk about in a little bit, recognizes the students who all won awards in Hearst this year. The awards are only for students in accredited journalism programs, which are about 105. So let's forge ahead. The categories for each competition in the writing, there are four or five. Photojournalism has three competitions. There's a couple for radio, television, and the multimedia competition just started 7 years ago. That was an add-on. So those are the formats that we that our students compete in. You're allowed two entries per category, so it's limited to the two best entries per category. They have to come from different students. The students have to be majors. The only exception to that is in the multimedia competition, they do allow minors to participate on the multimedia teams, not on the individual competitions. First place this year in photojournalism, $10,000 award to the school. First place in multimedia was a $10,000 award to the School of Journalism. And we received we'll receive an award of $25,000 for finishing first overall among all the schools who competed. And individual students' scholarships in those individual competitions totaled $30,000. This is the ninth year that we finished in the top five. You can see that our performance, as David mentioned, throughout the years has been really consistent. Back-to-back in 2001 and 2001, that is not an easy thing to do. You know, with sports polls and rankings and lists, the first question that comes from leadership is, what are you going to do for us next year? We're going to try our best to repeat. We like all units on campus, taken some pretty big hits in the past year in terms of staff and budget. But we have some really good faculty members, and better than that, we have some really good students. So hopefully we'll be able to finish first again next year. It will be tough. In the multimedia competition, since it was created, we won it every year. And I think this is important because a decision was made by the school back in 2007 to get out in front of multimedia. My major changed its curriculum significantly. Photo made a shift from film to digital. Painful for some people, but it's all worked out very well. The other thing that I want to say about the multimedia competition is that it involves collaboration between students from the different majors in the school. So when you look at those winning teams, you're going to see photojournalism students. You're going to see journalism majors who have done the narrative news writing. You're going to see some photo majors who have done some wonderful narrative news writing. Some of them are equally adept at writing as they are at visual presentation. So I like the idea that it's collaborative. 24 times, we're losing the bottom of this, but photo has won the individual competition 24 out of 29 years. And that's a pretty, strong record. When I came to Western in 05 during my interview, one of the questions that I was asked are, what do you want to do here? You know, what are your goals for the major in the school? And I said, I want to overhaul the curriculum, and I've done that with the help of my faculty in the school. I wanted to create a minor in the writing discipline, which we have done. And then my third goal was that I wanted people to talk about the writing major as much as they talk about the photo major. At best, ambitious. At worst, folly. But this year, the writing competition, overall, we finished fifth, which is the highest year since I've been here. And I'm hoping that we can continue that. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize Professor Amanda Crawford, who has really been solely responsible for developing wonderful student reporters in the upper division classes, where most of this work comes from. Unfortunately, she's leaving to take a job at the University of Connecticut. So she'll be tough to replace, but we'll get it done, I guess. So this is the top 10 schools. I love to tell my homies from Illinois that Northwestern's Medill School is noticeably absent. I hope I'm not insulting anyone in the room. I hear a lot about Medill, but they didn't even make the top 10 this year. And you can see some of the quality schools that we're competing against, legacy institutions like the University of Missouri in Indiana, Syracuse. Some of you know that Arizona State received a bundle of money, 50-plus million, from Gannett to rebuild their School of Journalism and Communications in downtown Phoenix. They have a lot of bells and whistles, but our students are competitive with all of these schools. And there's some notable schools that are not on that list, beyond Northwestern, who I love to pick on when we talk about schools of journalism.
Putting that back up for a moment.
Yeah, that's fine.
Would you mind putting that on the front page of the Courier Journal?
we just had a discussion about budget. We had a discussion about value. I want you to look at those schools right there.
Those are not cheap places to go to school. And I meet a lot with parents, with prospective students. I've had about 10 that have come in through the spring, and I have a couple more this summer. And when one of the questions I routinely ask them is, where else are you looking? And routinely, Missouri and Indiana are on the list. So it's nice to be able to tell them, well, those are great schools, but I think we do okay as well. And then I wander them down and show them our Pulitzer wall, and then they're pretty much sold on the deal.
Truly a value-added proposition.
For sure.
No doubt.
Very quickly, the Society of Professional Journalists, a national journalism organization, it's the largest national journalism organization. They also have a student competition. The organization is divided into regions. We compete in Region 5, some pretty good schools in Illinois, Kentucky, and Indiana. And we did very well in that competition this year. So at the regional competition, we had finalists for national awards in multimedia. The independent online student magazine, Red, is an important one. We created that specifically to publish student work that was produced in our upper division classes. A lot of our Hearst entries come from the Red site because Hearst requires that those entries be accessible to the public. So it also helps our students in the major build their portfolios, which is extremely important. We're a finalist in editorial writing. Chuck Clark is here. That was the Herald Editorial Board. And also in radio news and the best student magazine category. And this was at the regional level. In the national competition, where the regional first place winners compete against the other 11 regions, we had several first places in all our majors were represented. David was involved in the White House and the press, Fleshger Green program, which won an award. So beyond Hearst, we're doing pretty well otherwise. And these were our national finalists, Nicole Ayers, Abby Potter, Kelsey Hobbs, and Abby Potter, not only in photo, but also in multimedia. Abby graduated in May. I believe Kelsey might be still around. Nicole is in graduate school in Denmark, international communications. She's also won several national awards for her reporting in that area. And film. Last but not least. So this program's only completing its fourth year. We have about 160 majors, which is great. And they won their first major award. We just got word of that a couple weeks ago. So the school's hitting well on all cylinders, and we hope it can continue to do that. More important, Jeannie wants to talk about going forward just briefly.
So we're going to show you a couple of images from the winning student portfolios in photojournalism, just to give you a little visual taste of what won this year. This is a picture by Siobhan Altman, who's on an internship as we speak. And Nick Wagner was a graduate last year, but was still eligible to enter. Not allowed to scroll. There we go. Just to give you a news and sports hit there a little bit, you can just see the quality of the work that our students are producing. If you go to WKUPJ.com, you can see a lot of the work, but just for brevity, I wanted to at least show you a couple of images. So where do we go from here? Well, I'll just like to mention real quick that this is kind of an emotional time for me. Personally, I was a photojournalism major in this program, and Tamara Vininsky and I were the first two students to help WKU win the first photojournalism intercollegiate award. So to me, to be standing in front of you guys today is a proud moment because I feel like it's kind of come full circle. Our students leave these wins and go on, we're building their confidence to apply for Fulbright's internships, like at the LA Times, New York Times, where they end up, because this award catapults them into even more prestigious environments. So it's a great boost to the students' confidence. But what it allows us to do as a university is go out and recruit on a very confident level. This fall in November, Mac and I will attend the National High School Journalism Conference that draws about 5,000 students from high schools all over the country that are interested in being photojournalists, journalists, broadcast, film. And our table will be sitting amongst those tables of colleges that you saw on that list, but we're the only ones that are going to get to say we're national champions. So I'm very proud. You can tell I'm a little bit of a competitive person. I'm very proud of that. So we hope that what this will do is continue through recruiting efforts to bring in these top quality students. Because we can work our tails off every day and cultivate these students, but we need the students to begin with that want to be here and work hard. And so that's what we want to continue to bring in through these efforts and these wins. It basically becomes a cycle. And so we're very, very proud of our wins, but we're greedy. We want more. So we'll be doing a lot of recruiting efforts based on these numbers off these wins to bring in more students to continue these efforts. So, right. Any questions for Mac and I? Well, thank you very much.
I'm just about speechless. And really, it is such a jewel in our crown. But I want to point out, throughout this strategic planning process we've been going through, one of the things that is being emphasized is that we have to take care of those jewels. And so, We want this story to go on, and obviously lots of pulls and tugs everywhere, but and I think President Caboni agrees that programs like this, we've just got to support, and what y'all have done is magnificent.
Dr. Ridley, I want to thank you for the invite. Dr. Bale, to your point, I think sometimes when you put everything in one place, it has a little more impact than it's kind of spread out over a quarter of a century. I'm not a WKU grad, but I've known about this program for a long time and served with the former coordinator for the journalism majors, Jim Hyland, who was here for many, many years. I know a lot of you know Jim. And served on a board with him for several years. And every meeting he sat next to me and just gave me an earful of Western Kentucky to the point where I wanted to kill him. But when Western Kentucky came calling to me and said, hey, I want to take a look at us for this position, I think I was there the next week. So it's been a great time for me here. I've seen some great students go through the program. I'm a little bit troubled right now, like everyone is, about how we're going to navigate the future. But I think the dedicated faculty and Jeannie said, recruiting really good students, we really get some good ones. I expect we're going to hang around, most of us, for a long time. We appreciate whatever support we can get from the university.
I have to give a quick shout out to Tim Bogle and Jonathan Adams in particular, who that 7 year in a row multimedia win is not just a fluke. That's with a lot of hard effort, particularly from Tim Bogle, who I think is a genius on our faculty, and really cultivates these talents out of these students. So I did want to make sure I have a shout out to them. So we will continue with your support to
notice on that quote wall, we've left a lot of space.
Yes.
Expect more.
Thank you all very much.
One more question. Can you tell us roughly what's the size of your majors in these various programs?
In photo, we're about at 80 to 100, give or take, right now. Broadcast is closer to 150.
They're both, you know, they're higher than that. Broadcast
150 to 200.
The writing major and minor combined are about 150, 160. That number's been pretty steady. since I've been here. It took a little dip a couple of years ago, but Carol Lisi, our departmental advisor, has told me that going through TOPS, our numbers are up. So we're pretty happy about that.
And film is ever growing there between 75 and 100. Thank you.
The film program has been...
they've been growing.
They've been growing, and they've been a great supplement to the school because we had a four-year window or so where our enrollment dipped pretty sharply. And I can tell you that under Robert Deitel's leadership as interim director, he'll be taking on his second year starting the new academic year. We as a faculty, and I have to admit, I've been nagging constantly about this. We are really focusing on recruiting in the coming year. We have a good product to sell, and I think sometimes we assume that people know about it. We can't. We got to get out there and get face to face with these students and get them into our program because they'll have great careers regardless. I think when I meet with parents, I don't sell journalism as much as I sell just a great professional communication skill set that they can do anything. I love them all to go into news, but I'm a little naive, but I'm not naive enough to believe that that's going to happen. The ones that do well, but our graduates are all doing great in a variety of fields of professional communication, and even independently working for themselves.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just a great presentation. Chairman, that's a wonderful high note, and I also would like to take a moment to say, yes, we just celebrated wonderful things from the students, but a great example of two wonderful faculty members, and Chuck Clark, thank you very much for your leadership. And we get to see here only the surface of what's happening because this department in particular, the numbers are important. But in our times now, a program like this not only develops good citizens, it's responsible people who will help us with a free press. And that's extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your leadership. Mr. Chairman of the Academic Committee.
All right. Thank you.
Ding!
Great.
Thank you. Gail?
We got three action items, approval of personnel actions, which is approved routine, approval of the 2018-19 audit plan, assess for audit, and approval of an amendment to the internal audit charter. So we will start with approval of personnel actions and motion for approval of personnel actions, which was presented in your packets.
So moved.
Motion.
Second.
Second, Jason. And we'll open it up. Ann?
No comments. Okay. Can I answer questions?
Yeah, this is pretty standard stuff that was submitted in detail in your packets. Anybody have any questions on the committee? Anybody else? All right, then I will call for all those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Number two, approval of the 2018-19 audit plan in the attached. The audit plan is attached. It's put together, so I will again entertain the motion for approval of the audit plan for
18-19. So moved. Second.
Okay, David. I have a motion and a second. And Jennifer, anything you want to add?
I'll just point out a couple of things. The first three that are on there, just to make sure that you notice, those are from this current year, so we will come forward. We didn't get a chance to get to those, and we want to make sure we get to those because they are related to the prior year risk assessment. Not anything else, really, unless there's questions about the management request. We've had two of those, and we've made sure that we've made time for those. One's a compliance audit, and one is an operational review. Risk assessment projects. This is the first time we'll be getting into really what I would maybe call a department audit, more or less for the College of Health and Human Services. And you can read the project objective based on just inherent risk when you're transitioning leadership. That's the only reason it's on there. We want to go in and see what kind of financial activities they're doing, procurement card assessment at that point for them, travel vouchers, things like that, so that when we get moving forward with the new leadership, that we'll be ready and make sure that they're in compliance with university policies and procedures. And I state how we chose that one. We know that there's more than one college that's going through that transition, and it's basically a simple, they have the largest dollar amount in expenditures. So that's why we picked that one and for no other reason. And then the other one on there is the revenue stream analysis, basically a trend analysis to look at different revenues that are coming into the university, excluding the tuition and state appropriations and any grants that are coming in. We want to look at those other things that are coming in, determine what kind of factors we want to look at and the changes within those revenue streams, and follow that stream to whatever bank account it's hitting, and do an analysis on that.
Question about that.
Yeah.
Is that all, that's the business units then that are doing, receiving of services, I mean services that are being rendered for a fee? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Second. Yeah, go ahead.
Jeffrey, you have any capacity to take on anything else?
I just
wondered if something popped up.
We have some time on the audit plan for ad hoc requests. We usually have some spots that we leave open for things like that that come up. So, yes. And one other, I mean, this isn't set in stone, and we know that whenever you guys approve it, if something major changes or that we need to add, I bring that to your attention, and we make sure that happens.
Is Grant Thornton doing anything? They're in a project now, if that's correct.
Grant Thornton is not doing anything right now.
I have a question. That, what Craig is talking about, is that, do we have to approve that as an opportunity, or hiring Grant Thornton or something over and above? Is that something we have to do now, or we do it at the moment?
I thought Grant Thornton was helping you in...
They have in the past with more IT projects, and we don't have, well, we have the sensitive data management, and it's more of a review than an audit, so we feel comfortable that we can go forward with that without having to come in now.
Okay. The discussion we had last meeting about the outside income streams, wasn't Grant Thornton helping you with that?
Crowbar with this.
So they're still involved with that.
Yes.
Is that the only project?
Yes.
No, it's actually, I thought I knew where Brady was going.
Oh, okay.
That's fine. Thank you for clearing that up.
Any other questions? Yeah. I'm sorry, Pamela.
As I was going through here, and it's just a comment more than. Question, but you know, there's a couple things on here about the reduction in the workforce impacts reputation as a stable employer, and the impacts of the university budget reduction. And again, just to reiterate, there's something on here about lack of training in several areas and transitioning the leadership transitions. We've lost staff. We've lost people who are knowledgeable and skilled in their areas. You know, again, there will be issues going forward. There will be changes. There will be mistakes. There'll be things that we won't be able to handle as timely as we used to. Not that people aren't trying and don't care, but those definitely have an impact, as you point out in here, on you know what's going on. But you know, just keep that in mind as we go forward. That you know there are fewer people trying to do those jobs, and it does have an impact.
Right, and well, we try to come in and more or less add value and add a different look and a different way to do things if we need to. Because of the impact that that may have on our processes, we try to help with that.
That speaks in part to what Dr. Cavone was referring to with the other sacrifices that are being made to balance the $27 million hole.
May I say something?
Yes.
This is something to note. Freddie, their ad hoc requests, she's allotted 260, Jennifer's allotted 265 hours. for anything that comes up that may need review. And I'd like to ask a question. When, do you all have grievance committees for faculty and staff?
For faculty, I believe we do. I don't know that side of it very well.
Do we have it for staff? Grievance committee? I mean, I looked down and saw the finance administrative and university termination procedures, and I just kind of was just, that kind of popped up in my head was whether there was a grievance committee either for faculty or staff.
That I don't know for sure, which is what is, when we do this project, we'll get into that part to see how that works.
Okay, so maybe I was a little ahead. but thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Also, I'm sorry, I'm assuming that College of Health and Human Services, we've had two deans in the last 5 years. John Butler retired, and then we had Neil came. So that would make sense to even have an audit at that point in time if you've had two changes in a relatively small amount of time.
Anything further? Hearing nothing, then all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, like sign. Motion carries. The last item is the approval of an amendment to the internal audit charter. Let me comment on this. This was something, President Simone, that came up in the Budget Council's recommendations. We tabled it for further analysis and study. Several members of the board have expressed their support for this, and so that this was the appropriate time to kind of put it on, just to say that. But I will start, as I did before, with a motion to approve those the audit charter.
So moved.
The motion is second. Now discussion. Jennifer, you have anything you want to? President Boney.
Thank you, Regent Johnson. The Budget Council made a recommendation in February that we take a look at this as an institution to ensure that the internal audit function had autonomy. And I certainly approved that. Didn't want to agree to it then until we took a close look at it. And it was a board function and decision, not necessarily a presidential decision. So thank you for taking a look at it. And I'm supportive and agree with the recommendation. And look forward to shifting responsibility and working with our internal audit.
Ready? Anybody on committee got comments? Questions?
I think it's definitely in line with best practices and maturing processes. And excited about the work that Jennifer has done and continues to do. Benefit to this university.
And I will note this is not necessarily an easy action item to write. I want to thank Deborah to and you for catching something. Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none, and all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. All right, the last but not least, I'm going to do it on the clock over here. Good. Chicken. All right. Quarterly internal audit report.
Call me the closer.
You're the closer. Get that going.
So just a quick update on the quarter. We had two reports that we issued, both of them which were projects that were on the audit plan. One was a management request, one was based on the risk assessment. So we'll start with, you should have that on your information item as well. So we'll start with the Chill Water Contract Compliance Audit. That is a contract between the university and the Dedicated Student Life Foundation. So back in 2001, Student Life Foundation constructed a chill water plant on campus to be more cost efficient, and they provide chill water for the residence halls and some of the academic buildings as well. And so there's a contract that sets up the terms of the payments and the responsibilities of both parties. And so we looked at that contract to make sure that we were in compliance and with the billings part of that. And out of that, we had 8 recommendations. All of those were considered either medium or low. And we also had about 6 suggestions for process improvements. As an example, to be more automated with calculations. So we helped set up a spreadsheet that would do that instead of manual calculations. That's just an example of some of those things. And But both groups were very receptive to the audit and to the suggestions, so I look forward to seeing how that works out. The second project is the Cleary-Minger Act compliance audit. And if you don't know or have not heard of that, the Cleary Act is just a short name for the Gene. I have to read this because it's really long, sorry. The Gene Cleary Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Campus Crime Statistics Act. Yes. It's part of the 1965 Higher Education Act, so it's a federal law that we do certain reporting of our crime statistics on campus, not just on campus, but whatever their geography definition is of on campus. And the Michael Minger Act is similar to that, except it's a state regulation, and it also includes crime statistics and fire statistics reporting as well. So I wanted to focus on the recommendations. We did have four observations that were rated high, and out of that really comes a recommendation that we create some kind of project management team. That is a big project to gather all of those crime statistics and gather all of that data and push that out to two different things. So they report through the Department of Education all of the statistics, and then they also create an annual security report that goes out to the public. It's available to faculty, staff, students, and even potential students. So there's two separate things we were looking at. The Cleary Handbook gives you all kinds of requirements, and we did, through our testing, found some issues with that. So the overall recommendation is to put a project management team together to make sure we have a collaborative group looking at those statistics, making sure that they're accurate, making sure that the annual security report is accurate as well. We had some issues with things that were supposed to be reported in the annual report, did not make it into the annual report. We've also recommended, on top of that project management team, that there is a Cleary Handbook Appendix C, which is a checklist that tells you exactly what your report is supposed to have in it. And it's a great breakdown so that you can go line by line to say, yes, I have this in my annual report. So those types of things are what we recommended to make sure that we are in compliance with, especially the Cleary Act, also the Minger Act. Not as many issues with that one that we found, more or less, with the Cleary Act reporting. And also just a recommendation to train the people that are actually doing the reporting to make sure that we are up to date on the most recent Cleary Act handbook. So that's that in a nutshell. It was a really good report. Also, the people that are involved are very proactive in looking at the recommendations and the action plans, and also the other suggestions that we have that may not have been risk-related, but just some process improvements.
We're not going to let anybody from the committee get the points to make.
I got a question about operationally with the changes to the charter. Are we going to begin seeing these audit reports with action items as they're issued, since it's reporting to us directly?
Right now, I mean, I send those to both the chair of the Finance and Budget Committee and the chair of the board as we issue them.
So can we start?
Yeah, they come to me. I send them out to everybody. I send them out to every finance budget person.
Okay.
You've even responded to some of them. You've even...
I'll look at it.
Okay, that's fine.
But the budget item, I mean, the action items come out as a part of, not necessarily what Jennifer does. It becomes something from... From Ann or something like that.
That's what I'm most interested in seeing, is the action item. I understand that, you know, I don't get enough information just out of observation. I want to see the action item. So if you're already doing it, that's great. I'll pay more attention, but I would like to see it.
Anybody else?
So, and I just want to point out on... And it may be good to have more information on some of these. The Cleary and Minger Act are both very critical to the students at this university and for recruitment and for parents. But if anyone was not aware, the Minger Act was in place because a young man who was killed at Bristol University in a fire. And no information had been sent out that there had been a previous fire set. And that's why, I mean, these are people who have, students who have died on campuses because of lack of information. So I'm always very proud. I do get every year an annual report from our police department on the crime statistics, and that's a good thing, and it's a point for parents for recruiting to be able to know how safe a campus is, and we are a safe university. But that's what, you know, we enjoy to work on this one in particular. This is something that involves the life and safety of everyone on campus, and it's definitely mission critical.
My question was, your report includes crime statistics of what happens on campus. Can you comment on that in any way? Are we sort of flat, getting better, worse?
Well, I probably can't comment on that because I don't remember the trends, but they do a 3-year report. And that is out there for the public to see. You can go through each location of the university, including the regional campuses, and they're separated out like that. Even the farm is also one, and now campus. But I don't remember exactly how that looks as far as a trend. So I can give that to you if you need me to.
Just curious.
Yeah, sorry.
Anybody else? Any questions from this information item? No more questions. That, I believe, concludes Finance and Budget Committee meeting.
I will point out that at our retreat, we hope to be able to discuss some of these top categories, risk categories, and spend a little time, more time talking about that. Jennifer's not going to be able to be with us that day, but I understand present. Maybe.
Well, we have
this excellent pamphlet here that Jennifer put together on all that. We will talk about that some of the trip. President Cavone, you got anything to wrap things up with? Or?
No, just looking forward to the strategic plan, which continues to take shape. It is in the hands of the co-chairs who are doing some work and some additional polishing. And then look forward to, hopefully on July 20th, resharing that and having the co-chairs of the process come visit with all of you to get some additional feedback and to continue to kind of shape that as we move toward the fall. The other portion of that day, we've talked about having Huron here to discuss the budget model, and those two, separating that out from the retreat, if possible, so we can do a really deep dive on those two topics. And so it's particularly the strategic plan is going to set the tone for the next decade of work. So this board, which ultimately will approve it, I want to be sure that before there's the approval, you all have a chance to shape as well.
And the two co-chairs of that committee, Bruce Schulte and Paul Potter, have really given their heart and soul to that process. Yeah, it's been long and tough and frustrating at times, but I think they've done a terrific job. My hat's off to both of them. All right. A motion for
general I have something I'd like to say.
All right.
This may be my last meeting at this distinguished body. I've served as 6 years as a board member, and I wanted to take just a moment to refresh everybody's memory how we all get appointed. This process, the first thing, other than it's all governed by Kentucky statutes, and I'm going to give some very quick cliff notes on this. Kentucky statutes say that our university has three members of the Board of Regents, and they are staff, the faculty, and the student regent, and each one of those are elected by their peers. And so that's how you get to three regents. The other regents, which in our case are eight, for a total of 11 on the board, are first step is to show your interest in serving the Commonwealth of Kentucky by placing your name in consideration at the Board of Commissions, Board of State Commissions, Boards and Commissions. That group is appointed by the governor, and that group is normally consisted of 4 to 6 people representing various judicial regions throughout the state. They look at all these applications of the interest, and then they, as a term for one of the boards expires, they send to the governor 3 people who have an interest. Those 3 people are to meet certain qualifications, again, by statutes, not only gender, race, geographical location, as well as political party and affiliation, but they are the ones that take to the governor and make that request. The term that a region can serve is 2 6-year terms. And as I had mentioned, I am in the last part of my first 6 years. I did place my name with the nomination committee to be reappointed because I do have an interest in this university. However, as of a moment ago, I have not gotten any calls from the governor's office saying that I've been asked to serve. So, though maybe my application is still in consideration, I want to tell you all that if this is my last meeting, what an honor it's been to serve every one of you as a citizen of this Commonwealth. And to stress that even in this meeting it's been commented that some folks represent a certain group, we don't. When we walk in this door, we act as fiduciaries, that we are acting as a whole. We listen to our constituents, but our actions all have to be for the betterment of what our mission is. And once again, as George eloquently put, we are here for the students and the education of those people that will be better citizens in our Commonwealth and our communities and our nation. And with that, I want to say thank you very much. And though hopefully it's not my swan song, but I don't know that I'll have an opportunity to say thank you again. But so, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
We'll be sure you have that opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Very good. We, as Vice Chair Johnson pointed out, we do not need a motion for adjournment. So, barring any other comments from anyone,